Blog Talk Radio.
Necessity is the mother of invention. Black people have always been inventive, creative, and industrious. Go to any African street corner today and you'll find talented entrepreneurs selling, making, and distributing their wares. That talent was expanded as blacks were exported, sold, and enslaved to distant shores. The industriousness continued in America, where discrimination, slavery, and Jim Crow never stomped out the willpower of black people to create businesses. Today, we'll examine that black economic trail and why Elizabeth Keckley, Elijah McCoy, and Madam C.J. Walker were the forerunners to Wilson Copeland, Beth Williams, Pat Bonner Duvall, John Aki Duvall, Ron Walker, Leonard Egerton, and Clarissa Cropper. We salute these entrepreneurs past and present and learn more about the February 11th Black History Breakfast that pays tribute to black entrepreneurs everywhere. This is Carol Copeland Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. Thank you so much for listening. I'm not sure where you are, but I'm looking at a pile of new snow here in the greater Boston area, and we're actually in a deep freeze. It's very cold here, 6 to 7 degrees. It may have risen maybe to 12 or 20 at this point, but we're in a deep freeze for the next couple of days. We had a snowstorm yesterday that dumped several inches wherever you happen to live in the greater Boston area, up and down the East Coast. So it started off in the Washington, D.C. area, and then ended up probably in Maine going up into Canada, and we always get our share. So that's winter, and that's what winter is all about. Just bundle up, we're in lots of layers of clothes, and pray for sunshine and balmy weather as spring approaches in the days to come. So we're hopeful that it'll be here in the next couple of weeks and couple of months as well. Well, January is quickly turning into the early days soon of February. We only have one more week in January. I'm very busy working on the Black History Breakfast that I'll share a little bit more information with you and why it is so important. And we certainly this week have paid tribute to Dr. King. We actually had last week's show where we paid tribute to him. His birthday, he would have been 85 years old last week, January 15th. And we know what his life and his legacy certainly has meant to us. And certainly from a black entrepreneurial perspective, it's because of Dr. King, Dr. Abernathy, and the movement of those great giants that we are able to operate our businesses today freely and unencumbered in many instances. So we definitely thank our pioneers, our forefathers, for what they did to sacrifice for us so that we can operate our businesses like we do today. I've been an entrepreneur for 27 years, and I sort of trace my roots back to my father, Wilson Copeland. I even look at the fact that my brother, Wilson Copeland II, he wasn't named a junior. They didn't want a junior, so they named him Wilson Copeland II, has been a lawyer for probably 40 years. I forget how many years it's been. But he has always either worked for a black law firm in Detroit when he graduated from Vanderbilt Law School in the 70s, came back up to Detroit, married earlier, and is still happily married to my wonderful sister-in-law. But his first business working in the law field was a black law firm. And then in the very early 80s, he started his own law firm, Greer and Copeland, along with a partner, Benny Greer, who has unfortunately passed away, but the name is still there. And the firm is thriving and going forward. It is a black-owned business. It's an entrepreneurial endeavor, even though it's in one of the professions that we are accustomed to. So I guess my family has this entrepreneurial bent to it and has thus been so for quite a number of years. Even before that, I had an aunt, Clara Charleston, who had an employment agency back in the 60s and the 70s and operated that. So the entrepreneurial piece has been a part of the family for a number of years, as it has been for many families. And for that reason, I do pay tribute from a familiar point of view, from my own family's perspective, but also from the point of view of the fact that out of necessity, necessity is really the mother of invention, for a whole host of reasons, Black people have survived and in some cases thrived as business owners, whether they own their own farm in the South, whether they started schoolrooms, one-house schoolrooms post-slavery, whether they were blacksmiths, whether they worked in various capacities. The entrepreneurial piece certainly is a very proud and a very important part of our history. It did start in Africa. And again, you can go on any African corner in any country and you can see entrepreneurship with the kiosks and the street vendors and those who are selling fruits or vegetables or clothing or whatever it happens to be, cell phones. The whole concept and the spirit of entrepreneurship has been a part of our society and our culture for many, many years. Fast forward and look at what has happened in the United States. Certainly during the days of slavery, you did have Black entrepreneurs. You had freed Blacks or those who bought their freedom and started businesses for a number of reasons. A, they couldn't work for white firms. They weren't allowed because of discrimination. And B, to serve their communities. And in many cases, the communities of color and Black communities had high degrees of poverty. There were, it's almost like feast or famine, where the services were desperately needed in some cases. And then obviously you cultivated some very small middle-class Black communities in free societies. But one woman I'm thinking about as I look historically at Black entrepreneurs is Elizabeth Keckley. You may not know that name, but you definitely know the name of Abraham Lincoln and Mary Todd Lincoln, the couple obviously who occupied the White House from 1861 until 1865 when President Lincoln was shot and killed and assassinated. During that time, Mary Todd Lincoln, and as in the time of any presidential administration, you have social gatherings, you have events that take place, you have plays to go to, and the women have to dress accordingly. That's the same way today with Michelle Obama as it was with Mary Todd Lincoln. And even though the Civil War was taking place during that time, the social gatherings and the social activities still continued with the military operation in place, with military leaders, with those who visited the White House. There were social gatherings. And so Mary Todd Lincoln had to look good. And she scouted out for the best seamstresses in the city of Washington and decided that Elizabeth Keckley was her choice. Elizabeth Keckley was biracial. Her father more than likely was a slave. Mother was a slave master. But she was born into slavery, I believe, in Virginia, and ultimately was able to buy her own freedom. She learned the skills and the crafts of using her hands as a seamstress and became an extremely good seamstress, moved up to Washington, D.C., set up shop, and then became the seamstress, not first of all with Mary Todd Lincoln, but many of the other congressional women who were in Congress before the war started. She actually was the seamstress for some of the Confederate leaders, the women who were married to congressional men, senators, representatives who then joined the Confederacy after the war started. And then obviously they moved back home or moved to Virginia and she lost business there, but she picked up business with Mary Todd Lincoln, made a number of garments for her, was so proficient and had a thriving business, she had to hire other people. So she had other black women who were working under her to keep this business going. I don't think she ever bought a home at all. She lived in a rooming house for most of her life, but set up shop. She rented space and set up shop, had her equipment going, and again provided beautiful garments for Mary Todd Lincoln. So when you see some of the items, let's say, that are in books, or if there are any that have survived that are in museums, and you see them, and if they were made between 1861 and 1865, they were more than likely made by Elizabeth Keckley. So for black women during that time, if you were very good as a seamstress, you could make a halfway decent living as a seamstress sewing for, obviously, white patrons, more appropriately and mostly for wealthy white women, as Elizabeth Keckley had done. Kind of sad ending in terms of she and Mary Todd Lincoln sort of fell out. Elizabeth wrote a book, and it was not really a tell-all book, but there were some points in there where she talked about Mary Todd Lincoln and what it was like to work for her in the White House, and Mary was very upset with that and never forgave her for the rest of her life. So Elizabeth tried and tried and tried to rebuild a relationship with Mary Todd Lincoln, but was not able to do so. But she continued to go on, and she sewed. She had patrons. Life was kind of tough for her. Her son, unfortunately, had passed away, died during the Civil War. He was one of the fighters during the Civil War, one of the soldiers, and passed away. She ultimately taught at Wilberforce University for a short time and then died in an old folks' home, should I say. But she was one of the great first. Elizabeth Keckley is one I would encourage you to look up and see what her life was like. There's actually a book that was made in her honor. Then you move on and you talk about people like Elijah McCoy. Elijah McCoy was born in 1844 in Canada, in Ontario, Canada. He was the child of fugitive slaves who had left their Kentucky home and moved on up. The United States was too close, so they went up the border up into Ontario and settled there, had ultimately, I believe, 11 or 12 children. Elijah McCoy was one of them. And ultimately, they moved back to Ypsilanti, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit. I'm from Detroit, so I know that area. But he was sent over to Scotland and received a certificate in mechanical engineering. Came back to the United States. He worked for a living, but had a side business. He actually had a home-based machine shop, and from that shop came 57 U.S. patents, all dealing with lubricants of the steam engine. And we attribute the phrase the real McCoy, its origins may be elsewhere, but we definitely refer to it and attribute it to the oil drip cup invention that was made and patented by Elijah McCoy. When steam engines were put in place and when railroad companies, he actually worked for the Michigan Central Railroad, so he was in that business. But when he actually, when the phrase was coined, the real McCoy, they were referring in many cases to Elijah McCoy and the fact that his products and his devices were superior to others. And for that, he received great recognition, even though I'm sure there was probably some contention with the fact that he had all those patents and had created and invented so much. The era between the 1800s was just amazing with the number of black inventions, the black entrepreneurs who were in place, again, the difficulties that they had, but again, necessity being the mother of invention, taking those difficult times and triumphing anyway. And I guess one of the other great women that I want to talk about is Madam C.J. Walker. She's always been my hero, born after the Civil War. Her parents were slaves. I believe she was born in New Orleans, illiterate for a great part of her life, married when she was about 14 years old, had a child, and then became a widow. So started off like many people as a washerwoman, taking in laundry and those kind of things. But then in a dream, there came this formula. Her hair, she had stressed in her life, as many black people did during that time. And within a dream came this formula that was connected to straightening black hair. She is not the inventor of the hair comb, the hair straightener, but the products that were used when women would straighten their hair have been attributed to Madam C.J. Walker. She ultimately got enough money together, set up her own company, and had as many as 400 women working for her in various parts of the United States with her company. She died relatively young. She was a young woman, but a very wealthy woman who lived in a beautiful home on the Hudson in New York. She died in 1919, but has been really contributing to the economic development of black people and is probably one of the first black millionaires in the United States. Now, Mammy Pless in the California region before California became a state is also considered the first black woman millionaire, but California at that time, when she was thriving in real estate development, it was not a state. So we have to, I'm very careful about how I state these things because I know my listeners will challenge me on it. But certainly Madam C.J. Walker is one of the first black women millionaires in the United States, a hired tutor so that she learned how to read, learned how to write. She showered her daughter with wonderful clothes and educational opportunities, and now her descendants, Alelia Bundles, has written several books on her, on Madam C.J. Walker. Alelia lives in the Washington, D.C., Maryland area, was formerly a broadcaster, and is obviously an expert on her ancestor. So we look at these past individuals who overcame great obstacles to do what they have done and to become the leaders that they were in their own right. And that constitutes the willpower and the skill set that African Americans have had in the entrepreneurial arena. If you go to my blog today, you will read the biographical profile of my keynote speaker for the February 11th Black History Breakfast. This is actually the 21st breakfast that my company is holding, and I'm excited because we are saluting black entrepreneurs, past, obviously, but definitely those who are functioning today. Beth Williams is the president and CEO, an award-winning entrepreneur of Roxbury Technology, a company that she took over between 2002 and 2003 upon the sudden death of her father. She's a graduate of Brown University, was working in the corporate arena with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Massachusetts, doing extremely well. But the call came, and she had to take over. So often we think about boys and sons who take over their father's businesses, and we don't think about the daughters who take over, like Beth Williams. But she's so aimably and so affably and so articulately has done a yeoman's job with this company, now growing it to probably $15 to $20 million in sales every year. One of her principal clients was Staples, where they recycle toner cartridges. So she is a green company right in there with so many other exceptionally successful companies today. She's going to speak to us. You can read about her at my blog at tellcarole.com. That's TELLCAROLE. And see the journey that she has been on, transforming herself as first a corporate HR executive to a president and CEO. Beth has also been honored by our company. We honored her around 2006, and she, for a long time, has been very supportive of the Multicultural Symposium Series and the forerunner of that, the Empowerment Recognition Breakfast Series. And that's what I really, really support and I really like about Beth and others who are running their own businesses but can reach out and support and help others who are doing things in the community. And she has been a big supporter of community endeavors. So I hope her business continues to thrive and do very well for many, many years to come. So you'll have a chance to meet her and get to know her on February 11th at UMass Boston from 8:30 to 10:30 in the morning, where we're going to celebrate Black entrepreneurs. We're also going to celebrate some remarkable business owners, again, who are just defying the odds. A couple of years ago, I wrote a position paper, when the Urban League was in Boston. This was in 2011. I'm pretty sure it was 2011. And this paper was called The State of Black Boston, Civic Engagement and Leadership, Why Business Development Matters the Most. I took it offline, but I'm probably going to put it online in the next couple of weeks so that you'll have a chance to review it again. But it really talks about the representation of black businesses in Boston and the fact that we, in many ways, are overrepresented of black leaders in nonprofit organizations. We're overrepresented in terms of black leaders in education. We're overrepresented in terms of community and faith-based organizations, and we're underrepresented in business leadership, small businesses, and C-suite executives. Well, that may not mean much to you, but the significance of Boston and what Boston means to the rest of the world, and having that imbalance in terms of the number of small businesses that are not being created, is a problem in terms of the future of innovation in this city and in this region. In this report, I do talk about Roxbury Technology because it is probably, if not the largest, he's one of the largest black businesses in Boston. I would say probably Clayton Turnbull's company, he has a franchise operation with Dunkin' Donuts, is also up there in terms of size and probably one of the largest. So those two are probably the largest black businesses that I know of in the greater Boston area. Very important in terms of hiring. They're hiring people. Beth has a habit of giving people a second chance, so those who have been incarcerated have an opportunity to turn their lives around and work for her company. So the amount of opportunities, the job creations that take place in companies like Beth's and others in Boston and in other areas, extremely, extremely important. At the breakfast, we're also going to honor Patricia Bonner Duvall and her husband, John Aki Duvall, fabulous couple, dynamite couple, operating different businesses. Bonner's Enterprises is the business that Patricia runs, and her husband runs Jad Upholstery. I have couches and furniture in my house that have been successfully reupholstered years ago by Jad Upholstery. The artistry and the craftsmanship that John Aki Duvall has put forth in his business is just amazing. So I highly recommend Jad Upholstery for any kind of upholstery that you want to do in your own home if you live anywhere in the greater Boston area. Patricia Bonner Duvall effortlessly raises funds for nonprofit organizations in and around greater Boston. Every bit, $2 or more million a year, pass through nonprofits and are raised as a result of the efforts of Patricia Bonner Duvall. So we're going to pay tribute to her and all the work that both she and her husband have done. We're also going to honor Ron Walker, who I've known for probably 25 or 30 years. He's a longtime banker, worked for a number of banks in the greater Boston area, and then started a merchant bank. We're going to hear more about what a merchant bank is in his role as founder and president and CEO of Next Street Financial. That's a bank where a lot of businesses, probably the size of Roxbury Technology, they're in the $5 to $10 to $15 million range, and they're looking for financing and funding. They would go to a merchant bank like Next Street Financial and get funding. He has a beautiful office, several employees in the heart of the black community in Hibernian Hall in Roxbury, and just has done an exquisite job in terms of building his business from a financial point of view. And then we're also going to honor a really nifty couple, Leonard Egerton and Clarissa Cropper, the owners of Frugal Bookstore. Now, if you want ethnic books, not just black books, but Hispanic books, Asian books, anything along the lines ethnicity and culture and education, I would highly recommend that you go to Frugal Bookstore. It's in the Washington Mall, excuse me, off of Warren Street in Boston. They have just miraculously turned that into a treasure chest of beautiful books, tons of books, books that you normally wouldn't find in a Barnes & Noble and other bookstores. My books are actually there. I've had a couple of book signings there. And just the people who go in who regularly are patrons and patrons of Frugal Bookstore are just wonderful to see. We're going to honor the work that they do. And you'll read Leonard's bio. He's one person who's really turned his life around, turned a corner on his life, and had a wonderful mentor, the previous owner of Frugal Bookstore, who sold the bookstore to him and to Clarissa. It's a great American story, and I think you'll want to hear it. You will hear it at the upcoming Black History Breakfast that we're going to have at UMass Boston. It's exciting when I think about entrepreneurship. I've been an entrepreneur again 27 years, and the journey is not out for me yet. There are many things that I want to do, that I plan on doing going forward. It's been a struggle. It's been trying. I have more war stories than you could imagine, but I'm so grateful that 27 years later, the phone is ringing. The bills are being paid. The business goes forward. My speaking and training business certainly is bumped up now that the economy is turning the corner. Yay, yay. Woo, really happy about that. The events in terms of the breakfasts, the multicultural symposium series events have now become a staple in my business. So the wonderful thing about entrepreneurship is that you get a chance to not only hone your craft and do well, but you also get an opportunity to reinvent yourself, turn the corner if things are not moving in the direction that you want to, and start new enterprises. You can add on to your business, as I have done. You change things. I've always been a trainer and a speaker. I've always been involved working with people. The original business was a temporary employment agency, but still working with individuals and training them. I just sort of added and evolved. And so now this whole global dynamic is one that I've embraced as I call myself really a content provider, looking at issues related to multiculturalism, global diversity, leadership, and empowerment, doing a number of different things, so speaking, training, running these events that I run, working with organizations to help them to be more effective and more productive from a global and a multicultural perspective. So again, any business, if you're in business 27 years, you have to obviously market yourself in strategic ways, but always looking ahead, what's out there that your business can take advantage of where you can serve your customers? They did it 100 years ago, 150 years ago with those street corner vendors. In the United States, in the Caribbean, in Africa, and they're doing it again today, looking and taking advantage, being industrious, putting yourself forward, getting up when you fall down. If you're in business, you will fall a lot. Trust me, you will have more times to fall and fail than you can imagine. But the important thing is picking yourself up, dusting yourself off, and continuing forward and looking strategically at ways where you can serve your population. It's all about service, whether you're serving them in terms of doing training and speaking as I do, or whether you're serving them with products or books or other ways where people can become better, can do better, can resolve issues, because you, the entrepreneur, are making that possible. We salute Black entrepreneurs. They are needed more than ever. Innovation, critically important when we look at job creation, skill sets, the ability to have people to get to work, to and from work. We're looking really at Black entrepreneurs and how they are going to help impact the change that we need to see going forward. I hope that you will check out the breakfast and check out other ways that you can support this endeavor. Feel free to go to mssconnect.com. That's where all the breakfast information is. the blog you can read today, and you can read about Beth Williams and her history at tellcarole.com. That's TellCarole.com. And my motto is always, empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. And if you're a Black entrepreneur, if you're thinking about becoming a Black entrepreneur, believing in yourself and certainly in a higher power is the way to do it. Thanks so much. We will see you next week. Take care. Be warm wherever you happen to be. This is Carol Copeland Thomas signing off.